Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, presented by MakingAScene.org, we're diving into AI in the recording studio. You know, for us independent artists, the world has just completely changed. I mean, we can finish a song at noon and have it streaming globally by like dinner time. It's an incredible time, really. But with all that speed, there's still that one crucial final step, right, before your track goes out into the world: mastering.
Exactly. And that's really what we're here to explore today. Our mission, basically, is to uncover how these AI mastering tools are fundamentally shaking things up for independent artists, you know, comparing them to the traditional human mastering process. We want to help you understand the real trade-offs involved and ultimately give you a clear picture for making smart choices about getting that coveted radio-ready sound.
Yeah, that clarity on radio-ready. That's invaluable. But
yeah.
Okay, before we jump into the AI side of things, maybe we should back up a step. What exactly is mastering, and what does radio ready even mean today? Because I think a lot of artists just think it means making the track loud, right?
Right. You've hit on a really common misconception there. Loudness is definitely a component, yeah. But the real secret of mastering and what makes a track truly radio ready, it's actually about control. In translation, it's that final polish after your mix is done, the ultimate quality control, the enhancement phase. We're talking about balancing the tone using EQ, equalization, controlling the dynamics with like compression and limiting, setting that final consistent loudness level, and critically, checking how the music actually translates across different playback systems. I mean, you want your track to sound solid, whether someone's listening on tiny phone speakers or, you know, in their car or even through a big club PA system.
Okay, that makes sense. Control and translation.
Exactly. Now, radio ready. That term is a bit more nuanced than just being loud, especially when you think about traditional radio like FM or AM. See, broadcast chains, they add heavy multi-band compression and limiting. They have to keep a consistent sound across all the different songs they play.
Right. Everything sounds kind of glued together on the radio.
Precisely. So if your master is already like totally smashed or it has really harsh peaks, those radio processors can actually make it sound worse. It might start pumping weirdly or splattering or even distorting right there on the airwaves.
Oof. Yeah, you don't want that.
Definitely not. So a truly radio-ready master, it aims for clarity, a really stable tone, controlled peaks.
Sounds true.
Yeah, strong loudness, but not brittle loudness. The goal is so it can survive that extra squeeze from the broadcast processing without just falling apart.
Okay, survive the squeeze. I like that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you got to contrast this with streaming platforms. They handle things quite differently. They mostly use loudness normalization, which basically means they adjust the playback volume so all the tracks play back at similar perceived levels, no matter how loud you mastered it originally.
Ah, so they turn lighter tracks down and quieter tracks maybe up a bit.
Exactly. So for streaming, a smart master keeps the true peaks in check, usually around 1:1 dB true peak. And it aims for a healthy loudness level without just crushing all the dynamics, all the life out of the track. This way, when the platform normalizes your track, it doesn't end up sounding dull or, you know, lifeless compared to others. It's interesting. iZotope actually has some great resources explaining this whole loudness normalization thing in depth. And their master assistant presets, they even have settings specifically designed to account for streaming normalization targets.
Wow. Okay. So if you're making music, really understanding these differences, radio versus streaming is absolutely crucial. It directly impacts how your track will actually sound out there in the wild, whether it's on the airwaves or, say, a Spotify playlist. It's about respecting how your music is going to be heard, right? And making sure all your hard work translates properly. Now, knowing that, it really makes you wonder, how on earth do these AI tools even begin to achieve something so nuanced? It sounds a bit like magic, but what's really happening behind the scenes? What's the intelligence there?
Yeah. It does seem like magic sometimes. But the fascinating part, the real magic of AI mastering, isn't just automation. It's that these tools have effectively listened to and learned the sonic blueprint of, well, millions of successful tracks. It's pattern recognition on a massive scale.
So they're not just slapping on a generic preset.
Not the good ones, no. They intelligently listen to your track first. They analyze its spectrum, that's the tonal balance, the EQ curve. They look at its dynamics, its stereo width, its overall loudness. And based on that analysis, the AI then builds a custom processing chain, usually EQ, compression, limiting, maybe some stereo widening. And it's all designed to gently nudge your song towards a proven target curve, or sometimes even to match the characteristics of a specific reference track you give it.
So it's kind of emulating what a seasoned mastering engineer does, comparing to references and making adjustments.
Exactly. It's trying to emulate that experienced ear for what works, sonically speaking. Take Isotope Ozone 11, for example. It uses this AI-powered master assistant. It sets up the different modules, EQ, dynamics, maximizer for limiting, maybe their stabilizer EQ, aiming for a defined target like streaming or CD. But what's really cool is that it can also match the tone, the dynamics, and the stereo width of a reference master you choose right there in its assistant view.
Match your reference track. How does it get the reference?
Well, you can load a file, or they have this free companion app called Audio Lens. Audio Lens can actually listen to any song playing on your computer, maybe something from Apple Music or Spotify, and it captures that song's tonal fingerprint, its overall sonic balance. Then you can save that fingerprint and use it as a custom target curve inside Ozone 11.
Whoa, okay. That's clever.
It is pretty neat. So this experience that these tools mimic, it comes from studying countless great-sounding masters over years and years. They capture that optimal balance, the characteristics of tracks that translate well, and then they guide your new songs towards those benchmarks. And while the algorithms themselves are definitely getting smarter and more powerful all the time, the core idea, you know, learning from successful masters to shape new ones, that isn't entirely new. Even earlier versions of Ozone used similar concepts, like analyzing your track against genre-based targets or creating targets from specific songs.
That really drives home just how sophisticated these tools have become. It's not just basic automation anymore. It's deep pattern recognition, learned intelligence. So, the big question then, with this kind of sophisticated AI available, sometimes even for free or cheap, is it time to, you know, ditch the human mastering engineer altogether? What are the real trade-offs here? Let's dig into that.
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
True.
And it's definitely not a simple yes or no answer. There are pros and cons to both.
Right.
Let's try and break down the comparison points. First off, speed and convenience. AI mastering. It's practically instant. You upload your track or you run the plugin, click a button, wait maybe a few minutes, boom, mastered track.
Right, which is amazing for deadlines or just getting stuff out fast.
Totally. Perfect for demos, beat packs if you make those, quick singles, maybe if you're doing iterative releases where you put out versions often. Human mastering, on the other hand, naturally takes longer. There's listening time involved, note-taking, actual communication back and forth between you and the engineer, revision time.
More of a process.
It's a process, exactly. But that extra time, that human interaction, it can often lead to significantly better, more tailored results, especially for your really important releases like an album or a key single.
Okay, speed versus tailored results. What about cost? That's usually a big one for indie artists.
Oh, absolutely. Cost is a huge factor. And AI mastering is, well, undeniably cheap, sometimes even free. You've got services like Landar. They offer Paper Master, maybe around £9.99 or so, or subscriptions from like $12 to $25 a month, and they even have a plugin now. Then there's eMastered. They're around maybe $13 to $19 a month if you pay yearly, or like $39 month to month for unlimited masters. BandLab mastering is actually free if you're using their platform. Master Channel is another popular one that's pretty affordable.
So very accessible price points. How does that compare to hiring a person?
Yeah, it's a different ballpark. Hiring a human professional, the cost varies quite a bit. You can find many excellent independent mastering engineers charging, say, in the $70 to $150 per track range, maybe more for attended sessions where you're actually there, or for specialized stuff like vinyl pre-masters. And then you have the bigger studios like Abbey Road's remote mastering service. I think it starts around £90 or £100 plus per track. So significantly more than AI.
Okay, definite cost difference. What else?
Another key thing, especially for albums, is consistency across the whole project. A human mastering engineer brings taste, perspective, a sense of narrative to an album. Let's say your album flows from like an intimate acoustic ballad right into a heavy rock track. A human engineer will carefully shape the transitions, manage the loudness song to song, making sure the entire record feels cohesive, like a journey.
Right, they're thinking about the whole listening experience.
Exactly. AI usually treats each file you give it on its own. It optimizes that track. Unless you get really meticulous and work around it, like using the same reference track carefully for every single song, it probably won't create that same natural album flow by default.
That makes sense. What about feedback?
Ah, creative intent and feedback. This is a big one where humans shine. A good mastering engineer, they don't just process the audio, they listen. And they often provide invaluable feedback about your mix itself.
Oh, like suggesting changes before mastering even starts?
Precisely. They might say something like, "Hey, the kick drum seems to be masking the bass line in the chorus." Or you might want to de-ess the lead vocal a bit more. It's a little harsh. And fixing those kinds of issues in the mix at the source is almost always way better than trying to fix them later with mastering processing.
Right, and AI can't really do that, can it? It doesn't know your artistic intention.
Nope. AI can analyze the audio data, but it can't hear your story, it can't understand the emotional context, it can't ask you questions about what you were going for. A human can, and often does.
Good point. Are there technical areas where humans still have a clear edge?
Definitely. Think about edge cases and specific technical deliveries. For really tricky work, like preparing a master specifically for vinyl cutting that requires careful low-end management, controlling stereo width in the bass.
Yeah, vinyl's picky.
Very picky. Or preparing masters for specific broadcast standards. Or dealing with older specs like MFET, mastered for iTunes, which some distributors might still ask for. Also things like creating a DDP image for CD manufacturing, embedding ISRC codes correctly, doing stems mastering where you deliver separate instrumental groups, or even things like audio restoration, cleaning up noisy live recordings. Humans, with their judgment, specialized tools, and crucially, their calibrated listening environments, still absolutely excel at these complex tasks.
Okay. And you mentioned radio earlier.
Right, that up-to-date translation for radio. This is still really important. Experienced human engineers, they really understand how those aggressive multi-band compressors and limiters used in FM, AM, and digital radio chains affect audio. It's a very specific type of processing.
The squeeze you mentioned.
Exactly. They could pre-shape your audio, maybe leaving a bit more dynamic range or managing the density differently so that it lands better after the station's processor kicks in. If you send a super hot, dense master one that sounds great on Spotify, maybe to a radio station, their processor can sometimes make it sound small, thin, and kind of crunchy. A pro engineer knows how to anticipate and mitigate that.
Wow. Okay. So lots to consider. It really sounds like it comes down to this specific project, right? Your needs, your budget, your timeline, each approach, AI or human, clearly has its own distinct advantages depending on what you're actually trying to achieve with that particular piece of music.
That's exactly it. It's about choosing the right tool for the job.
So let's make it practical. When should someone listening right now feel confident using AI mastering? When is it genuinely good enough or even the smart choice? And when is it really worth stretching the budget for a human ear?
Okay, let's break that down. AI mastering really shines and is often perfectly good enough in a few key scenarios. It's superb when speed is paramount, when your mix is already solid and well-balanced, and when budget is tight. Those are the big three.
Makes sense. Like, for what kind of releases?
Think singles that are going straight to streaming platforms, especially if you, say, use a reference track you really love to guide the AI, and then you carefully check the result on different speakers yourself. That can work great. A lot of artists also use AI mastering as a quick check during the mixing stage, you know, just to hear how the balance holds up when it's brought up to a competitive loudness. It's a good reality check.
Oh, that's a smart use case.
Yeah. Also, for quick releases, maybe micro EPs, content for YouTube or social media, remixes, beat tapes if you're a producer, or demos you're sending out for sync pitching. For all the situations, AI is often a very practical, efficient win. Tools like Landar, eMaster, BandLab, Master Channel, they get you over the finish line fast and affordably.
Okay. What about combining them?
Ah, yes. The hybrid workflow. This is actually a very smart approach that a lot of people are using. You can use an AI tool to get a really good competitive starting point very quickly. It does the heavy lifting of analysis and initial processing. But then, instead of just accepting the AI's output as final, you tweak it yourself. Tools like iZotope Ozone 11 are great for this because they actually let you see and adjust the processing chain the AI created. You can go into the EQ module, the compressor, the maximizer, their stabilizer module, and fine-tune things by ear. Add your own flavor, make adjustments based on your taste.
So you get the AI's learning, but still have creative control.
Exactly. Yeah. It's kind of the best of both worlds. You get a scientifically derived target to aim for, but you blend it with your own musical judgment and intent.
Okay, so that's when AI is strong. When does it fall short? When should you definitely call a pro?
Right. AI does have shortcomings, and knowing them helps you decide when to invest in a human. One big area is context and creative intent. AI analyzes data, but it doesn't understand nuance in the same way a human does. For example, if your song relies heavily on microdynamics, you know, the delicate swell of a vocalist's breath or the airy, interactive feel of a live jazz trio, an AI trying to hit a standard loudness target might smooth those out too much. It might make the track technically correct, but also smaller, less impactful, losing some of that original magic.
It might prioritize tidiness over vibe.
Well put, yeah. Similarly, if your mix has underlying problems like Maybe a specific frequency is ringing out badly, or there's some really harsh sibilance on the vocals. AI might just try to average the sound towards the target curve, maybe dulling the whole track slightly to hide the issue, instead of identifying the specific problem and suggesting you fix it back in the mix. A human would likely spot that.
Right. Feedback again.
Mm-hmm.
And on an album, as we touched on, AI generally won't understand the track order or the narrative flow you've crafted unless you really carefully guide it for each and every track, probably using references. It won't naturally create that cohesive journey.
Okay. Any specific types of projects where humans are still pretty much essential?
Yeah, broadcast and vinyl are still two prime examples where investing in a human expert heavily rewards you. Radio, like we discussed, has that heavy downstream processing. A master that sounds perfect on Spotify might feel pinched or even distorted on the radio if it wasn't prepared with that in mind. And vinyl production. It's a physical medium with real limitations. It demands careful management of low-end frequencies, control over serial bass information, precise decisions about mid-side balance, all to ensure the needle tracks properly and the record sounds clean when it's cut.
Very technical stuff.
Very technical. And still heavily relies on the experience and judgment of a human ear using specialized tools. It's worth noting, too, the landscape changes. Like, Cloud Bounce was a popular AI service, but it shut down its standalone platform in 2025. However, its AI mastering technology didn't disappear. It now lives on Inside FL Studio's own AI mastering features and their FL Cloud service, so the tech evolves and moves around.
Good to know. So bottom line, when is it time to definitely invest in a human?
If it's a flagship single for your project, if you're pressing vinyl, if it's a full album that needs that cohesive flow, or really anything with a long-term impact, the artistic statement and getting every nuance right truly matter. In those cases, a human mastering engineer is a fantastic investment. You're paying for their experience, their taste, their ability to make your music translate well across all systems.
Mm-hmm.
You get that crucial song-to-song consistency for an album and often incredibly valuable feedback that can help you improve your mixes in the future.
And options range from big famous studios like Abbey Road to lots of really skilled independent engineers working remotely, right?
Absolutely. There are many, many excellent options out there at different price points.
That's a really clear breakdown. Thank you. So for everyone listening who's making music, maybe here's a simple plan that could work. Use AI mastering early and often during your mixing process. Get those quick checks, hear how your track sounds, push closer to final loudness. It's a great tool for perspective. For your more casual singles, maybe stuff just going to streaming or social media, feel confident shipping the AI mastered version, especially if you check it carefully. But for that really important release, the tentpole single, the album you poured your heart into, the vinyl pressing, book a human mastering engineer. And here's a pro tip, maybe. When you send the track to the human engineer, consider sending your best AI-generated master along as kind of directional reference.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe include a couple of commercial reference tracks you like too. That can really help communicate the vibe you're going for, save some back and forth time, and help them nail it.
That's excellent advice. Using AI as a communication tool with your human engineer can be really effective.
And just to hammer it home, remember that difference between radio and streaming. Don't just slam your master against a limiter trying to win the loudness war, especially if radio play is a possibility. Leave some room for their processing to work.
Couldn't agree more. Let it breathe a little.
Okay, cool. Now, for those folks listening who are thinking, all right, I'm curious now, how do I actually use one of these AI tools? Maybe we could quickly walk through the experience. Using something like, say, iZotope Ozone 11's Master Assistant, just to give people a feel for the workflow.
Absolutely. Yeah, using a tool like Ozone's Master Assistant is actually surprisingly straightforward, which is part of its appeal. You basically start by loading the Ozone 11 plugin on your master bus right at the end of your chain in your digital audio workstation. Or you can use the Ozone application standalone and just load your final mix file, usually a WAV file.
Okay, got it loaded up. Then what?
Then you'll see a button, usually pretty prominent, labeled Master Assistant or something similar. You click that, it'll likely ask you for a destination target first. This is important. You'd pick something like streaming, if your main goal is Spotify, Apple Music, etc. That setting usually aims for loudness levels common on those platforms and sets a conservative true peak ceiling, like Negapen 1.0 dBTP, to avoid clipping after their encoding. Or you might choose CD, if you're actually pressing compact discs, or maybe a DJ player if it's a track for club play, which might have slightly different loudness expectations.
And the reference track part.
Right. Optionally, you can give it a reference track at this stage. You can either point it to an audio file on your computer, or if you've used that Audio Lens app we mentioned, you can select a tonal fingerprint you captured from another song. This helps the AI match the vibe you're aiming for.
Okay, destination set, reference may be loaded. Now the listening part.
Exactly. You find the loudest, most dense section of your song, usually the main chorus or drop. You start playback from there in your DAVL. Then you hit the start or analyze button in the Master Assistant. You let Ozone listen to maybe 10, 15 seconds of that loud part. While it's listening, the AI is analyzing your song's sonic profile, the EQ balance, the dynamics, the stereo width.
And then it builds the chain.
Yep. Once it's done analyzing, it automatically populates Ozone with a chain of processing modules. You'll see things like an EQ module appear, maybe a dynamics module like a compressor, definitely the maximizer, which is their limiter, maybe the stabilizer module for refining tone. It sets initial settings on all of these based on its analysis and your chosen target or reference.
And crucially, you said it's not a black box. You can tweak it.
That's the key. It hands you the controls right after. You'll typically see some macro controls, maybe an amount slider to adjust the overall intensity of the processing. Or even better, you can click into each individual module, the EQ, the compressor, the limiter, and adjust their parameters yourself, just like you would if you'd set them up manually. Fine-tune the EQ bands, adjust the compressor threshold, tweak the limiter settings.
So you can refine it by ear.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Use your own musical judgment. A really important step is usually in the maximizer module. Look for a button called Learn Threshold. If you play your track again, clicking that button will often make the limiter automatically adjust its threshold to hit your target loudness level intelligently. And always make sure true peak limiting is turned on, especially for streaming, to catch any intersample peaks.
Good tip. What about checking the result?
Absolutely essential. Always use the bypass button. Ozone has a gain-matched bypass, which is great. This lets you compare the before and after at the same perceived loudness so you can judge if the processing actually improved the sound, not just made it louder.
Critical check.
Critical check. And then listen on multiple systems. Don't just trust your studio monitors. Check it on headphones. Check it on some small, crappy speakers if you have them. Definitely check it in your car if you can. You need to know how it translates.
And then export.
Then export. Usually your music distributor will want something like a 24-bit WAV file at the same sample rate as your session. Follow their specs. And again, if you think radio play is a possibility, maybe back off that limiter just a touch. Send them a clean 24-bit WAV that's loud, but still has some musical dynamics, not totally squashed. Don't overlimit it.
That's a great walkthrough. What's really fascinating there, I think, is that it's not just this mysterious black box spitting out a master. It's more like an assistant or maybe even a coach. It sets up an optimal starting point based on tons of data, and then it hands you the controls to refine it, to add your artistic touch.
Exactly.
It feels like it makes learning about mastering and actually achieving a polished, competitive sound much more accessible for artists at pretty much any level. It really blends that AI-learned intelligence with your own musical judgment.
It really does. And, you know, given how rapidly AI is evolving, not just in mastering, but across the entire music creation space, this raises a pretty important, maybe even provocative question for all artists listening. As AI mastering continues to get more sophisticated, potentially even more nuanced, how might the role of the human mastering engineer continue to adapt? What does their future look like? Will they perhaps become highly specialized AI coaches, folks who are experts at guiding the algorithms, choosing the right references, fine-tuning the AI's output for specific nuanced goals? Or will they perhaps focus even more exclusively on those truly unique bespoke projects, the complex restorations, the vinyl cuts, the albums that demand a deeply subjective artistic interpretation that algorithms might struggle with? And maybe the bigger question for you, the artist, is what does your creative intent truly mean in a world where algorithmic perfection, or at least algorithmic competence, is becoming increasingly easy to attain? How do you leverage these tools while still ensuring your unique voice shines through?
Those are really powerful questions. Definitely something for all of us creating music to think about as we navigate this changing landscape. How do you want to integrate this technology with your own artistic vision? Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into AI in the recording studio. We really hope this exploration has given you a clearer picture of the current landscape and maybe empowered you to make more informed decisions for your own music. And hey, don't forget to check out all the other great articles and resources over on makingascene.org for more insights. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.